Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we worked in the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real-life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates, as we debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, frauds, scams, and multi-level marketing. Hey, Hunbots and Hunbros. I have had a really fantastic week. Tortured Poets Department came out this week, and I've just been vibing. It's great. If you haven't listened to it yet, you're probably not a Swiftie, and that's totally fine. But for those of you that are Swifties, oh my God, right? We have like a whole thread on Discord. You should check it out. I am in love. I am just listening to it on repeat. I think this is like my sixth or seventh run through. I have no life, you guys. I just podcast and listen to Taylor Swift. That's all I do. Congratulations, Taylor, for getting all of us on that secret double album drop at 11 o'clock my time. So actually, I didn't have to wait up too late to find out and to listen, but we did stay up and listen to it, and it was just really, really fun. And another cool memory to have with Abby. It was really funny because I told her she could stay up to listen to what I thought was the whole album. And then she went to bed and she's like, if something cool happens at 2 a.m., you know, at the 11 o'clock drop, wake me up and let me know, okay? I said, of course. So when 11 o'clock comes around and you find out that, surprise, it's actually a secret double album and here's the remaining tracks, 31 brand new songs, you guys, for real. I went into her room and I woke her up and she was like, what, huh? I said, it's a secret double album. She's like, can we listen to it? I'm like, absolutely not, go to bed. So it was just really fun, and Taylor brings so much joy in our life. I know I've talked about her enough, but Taylor just brings so much joy into our life. And I'm happy to share that joy with my daughter. And I'm happy to share it with those of you who are also Taylor Swift fans that listen to the podcast. There's a nice little intersection in that Venn diagram. Next, I want to welcome our newest Patreon members. Welcome, Jackie and Christy. It's great to have you. I also want to remind you that the Multi-Level Marketing Conference is coming up, and you can register for free at mlmconference.com. That is going to be on the 2nd and 3rd of May this year. Michelle and I are producing a segment about the social media impact and the culty ways multi-level marketing controls you. You should definitely check it out. I am really proud what this year's speakers and advocates are working on, and it's just going to be really good. And then lastly, I want to give you any trigger warnings for this episode. This is an episode with our friend Shani Payton of the Shani Pants Show. And we talk about her culty upbringing, but also her journey through infertility and the adoption and foster process. So if these are hard topics for you, please use caution, or we will see you next week. And with that, I will say this is a pretty lighthearted episode. Shani is hilarious. And we also have a special guest co-host. Enjoy. Welcome back to another episode of Life After MLM. We have a special episode today. We are in the middle of Child Abuse Awareness Month, and we have been doing a little heavier of episodes. Don't worry, more MLM episodes are coming up, I promise. But we're getting through this. Today we have a guest host. You know her and love her. It's Michelle. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Roberta. Hi, everyone.
And then Michelle and my very good friend, our great friend, Shannon Payton, It is so wonderful to have you on the show. You guys may know her as Shanny Pants. If you don't, you should. But Shanny, hi, how are you?
I'm so good because I'm here with you. I'm very excited to be here.
We all worked on the I Got Out story jam together, which was really fun. And it's just, it's great to be making content again and hanging out again. It was like, as soon as we all got in the recording and we all saw our faces, it was like a, oh my God, kind of situation. So
it's just nonsense.
It really was.
Just sounds, excitement.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds and excitement.
To be fair, I haven't gotten to see Shannon very much since Shannon. I've never called you Shannon in my life.
But that's cute. That's cute though.
I haven't gotten to see Shanny very much except on her hilarious YouTube shorts, obviously.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
But since we were roommates in October, oh my God. But like the second that we met in person, it was like, oh, okay. Like we're friends. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I
mean, like we had met before that, but it was like, you know, it's like an instant like, oh, okay.
Yes.
This is
there was a good connection for sure.
Comfortable person to be around. Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to go to that. So I didn't get to partake in the hanging out and the hugging and the roommateness.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of bummed.
You really missed out because we were great roommates and you would have added to the party for sure. But that's okay.
We were next good. Time. We were great.
Yeah. We were great.
Well, let's get to the meat and potatoes of what we're going to be talking about today. Like I said, it's Child Abuse Awareness Month. And so we're going to be talking about a heavy topic. These are some trigger warnings. We're going to be talking about foster care and adoption. We have watched the Natalia Grace documentary. We watched it on Discord as a group. If you're not in the Discord, you're missing out. Go join the Discord so you can join in on our watch parties. But while we were watching this documentary, like so many times, Michelle and I were like, we need to talk to Shanny. Like we need to get Shanny in here. Shanny knows what's up. And we want to talk about all of this from your perspective as somebody who is an adoptive parent and who has been through this adoption and foster care roller coaster. But first, we want to talk about your upbringing. You were raised in a cult.
Yes.
And we're going to start there.
Okay.
And we're just going to see how your young life, the beginning of your life really informed all of your decisions and everything that happened to you. So let's start at the beginning.
All right.
Where you were born into a cult.
Yes, I was born into a cult. I still live up in Northern California. I have lived here my whole life. So I was born in 81. I didn't really have a choice what I was born into, obviously. It was a very high control religious cult based off of Christianity. But, you know, sarcastically, I say now that it was just basically pulling Bible verses to make what they wanted to happen be what we believed. So a lot of confusion as a child. My family was always a little bit on the outskirts because we were a bit rebellious, which of course now I'm very proud about, but it was very confusing growing up. There were such strict rules, but my parents were a little lenient with them. I think now looking back, that really saved us kind of because I'll meet people and they're like, well, how are you so normal now? Which is very sweet. But I think that is why when I look at other families that were maybe more on the strict side and like real hardcore into our beliefs and stuff, you don't see so much of that normal coming through now. So I do think that saved us and helped us a lot. My whole family is now out. My husband still has family members in. So that's an interesting situation too. But it's for the most part, you know, the people that I would hang out with normally, I still do because we're all out. But growing up in that, you kind of, as you grow up, this group was your life. We didn't do any extracurricular activities, no sports or theater or all the fun things that I'm forcing my kids to do now because I didn't get to do them. We weren't allowed to do anything like that. Some kids did go to public school. We were allowed to. So that was one little difference that we had. Several families did go to public school. Most were homeschooled. So aside from just being at school with different people, that was really our only outside influence at all. We weren't allowed to like do birthday parties with any school friends or, you know, so it was pretty minimal as far as our contact with the outside world. We grew up that way, pretty strict. And then basically you just know you're going to get married. Like that's your job is to get married and have kids. So you kind of grow up and you look forward to it. That's what your whole life as a child, that's what you look forward to. So I remember from a very young age, I'm sure a very unhealthy young age, I could not wait to get married and get pregnant. Like, I thought pregnant people were the cutest, and I just absolutely loved everything, like, as a child, of course, but like, I just thought it was amazing. And I was so excited for that to be my life. And because we got married so young, a lot of us were attached. It was not arranged marriage, but because you knew you were going to have to get married, you kind of had to tag people and be like, ah, he's mine, because your options are pretty limited. So at 12, I knew who I was going to marry, and I did, and I'm still married to him. No boyfriends, no dating, nothing, you know, no experiences like that. It was just, okay, like, we didn't even date. We weren't allowed to, because you're just with groups the whole time and everything has to be chaperoned, like, a lot. No dating process, really. It was just very awkward. You're always with people. You're never alone. So you really don't know this person that you're going to marry. It's pretty weird. But that's what we did. I remember, like, in high school, because I went to public school, in high school, I was engaged. And so my friends at high school were just like, no, you're not. Like, and the weird thing at school was too, because I lived in a pretty small town. So I went through K through eighth grade with all the same kids, and then went to high school with the same kids as well, which obviously others joined. But so I had the same, like, school friend group pretty much my entire life. So I was still in grammar school when I had a boyfriend, you know, that I was going to marry, but no one had seen him, because they're like, you talk about him, but like, because we wouldn't go to sports games or like do all the normal things that school kids do. So they just thought he was like a ghost. They're like, yeah, that's cute how you just make this up.
He's your boyfriend that lives in Canada.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it, I had a friend who must have been in a cult. Uh-huh. Because I really thought that she had a fake boyfriend, but now I'm realizing that maybe I'm the asshole. Yeah. Wow.
You were the one pushing her, and poor girl, she just is like, just please believe me. Yeah.
Wow.
It was pretty weird.
Well, what denomination of cult is this, aside from, like, weird Christian belief system?
So it's not, we literally, and this is the hardest part to explain to people, we have no name, or had no name. So we would meet at homes or in, like, Grange halls is where our favorite place to meet. So, like, every city or town, I guess, has, like, a Grange hall, kind of like the Elks Lodge that every, like, city or town has. It's kind of like that, but it's like a community building. So we would rent those, and that's where we met a majority of the time. And we would do Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. We were always together. Friday nights, we would usually meet at people's houses. So we were able to just hang out, and we wouldn't have to have, like, a sermon or anything. So that was always, like, our fun night. Except it wasn't that fun, because the guys got to play basketball or some sort of sport, and we got to sit and watch. And it was cool. It's like, yay. I love being a girl. And I wanted to be a boy. Like, my sister and I were just talking about this, and I'm curious actually to ask this to other people, because I haven't. But I always wanted to be a boy, because it was so unfair how we were raised to be a girl, because we were always the ones that had to dress right so the men didn't sin and get in trouble for what we're wearing every single day. And then we couldn't do anything. Like, at least when we were together, the guys could play, like, basketball. That was their sport, which was very sad. Not like it was cool, but it was better than sitting around and talking to all these same women that you talk to every single gathering or meeting. So we didn't even call it church. We called it meetings, but we had no name. So no sign, no name at all. So it's pretty weird. And that reason that we got for that was just because we're meeting in the name of the Lord, and we don't need to meet under a name. It's his name, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's not uncommon. You are not the first person to be on the show to be like, I was in a no-named church fellowship. Right. We didn't have a name. We didn't have a church. We didn't have anything other than like a group of people.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, the people are the church, right? So, like, in the Bible, there's something that talks about that.
That to me sounds very Quakery, that's what Quakers believe, but they're, like, very unculty,
right?
They're, like, not high control at all,
right?
Opposite of that, but kind of the same theory behind them they don't have mass, they have meeting, mm-hmm. and they just come together, and anywhere that there's two or more gathered,
yes,
yeah, I'm there.
Yes, yes. And I think like that idea and even how our group started, I think innocent enough, right? I think because it started like my grandparents' generation, it started as like, we don't want to associate with denominations. We want to just meet with ourselves. So they did just start like basically doing Bible study in homes. And I guess it really wasn't until the late 70s, I think, when the owner, the leader who I, you know, lived my life under kind of took over. And that's when it sounds like things really progressed pretty quickly into what it was when I lived in it. So yeah, I think it probably started out innocent enough, just some people wanting to get together and read the Bible or whatever. So I get that, the name part, as far as like why, that's why they did that. But yeah, pretty interesting. And then that was even hard to explain to kids at school because they were like, what are you? So they just named us New Christians. They just called us New Christians because they couldn't figure out. So they had to give us a name. And of course, we couldn't have a name. So yeah, but it was hard explaining to kids. And I was super shy and like introverted at school and very insecure. Just we had to dress weird, like long skirts, no tank tops, you know, no tattoos, no piercings, no cutting hair, all the weird things.
I've seen one of those skirts. I have somewhere. Where was that?
Probably on me. Oh, Roberta wasn't there. She didn't get to see it.
Oh, just yeah. Keep rubbing my face in it.
I'll just send her a picture.
Well, that's like such an interesting way to grow up. You're born into this cult. There's no name. There's no church. There's no building. It's just sort of this idea, this like congregation, really, of like, hey, you want to meet at the VFW hall and talk about God today? People are like, yes, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing. In fact, that the kid, it's so weird to the kids at school that you are in a relationship that's going to end in marriage one day that they don't believe that your boyfriend exists.
Right.
And they give you guys a name because it's such a strange phenomenon. You're not Christians because like we go to the church and you're never at that church. So you must be new Christians. Like it's so wild, the people around you that are adapting to this odd thing too, because they are like, we have to give this a name. What is this? And you're like, but we're not allowed to have a name.
Yeah. Sad.
Sad.
It's just sad.
Sad is a good way of putting it.
Yeah. And it was like, I think about how insecure I was as a child. And now looking back, I can totally say, oh, I was a very anxious person. I was a very depressed person my whole life and didn't deal with it, of course, until I was out and an adult. But when I look back at my childhood and my thoughts and just where I was, I'm like, yeah, I was not in a healthy place. Like I was very screwed up kid. And again, this is like my home life was good. I had nice parents. Like I was raised in a normal home, except for this group that was our life, basically. It was very weird.
Well, I also grew up in a really small town, and there were a lot of big families that dressed the way you're describing, that interacted with each other the way you're describing, that sort of felt like outsiders, even though they were at school with us. And it's making me wonder, were these people a part of something that you were, like something similar to what you were a part of as well?
Probably. And if you lived in the same area where you live now or close to it, there's a good chance because we had a pretty large group down in that area.
Well, there you go.
So we might have to have a conversation about that.
Well, I live in the rural part of San Diego. So I'm out east. And really, yeah, I grew up with horses and we had like an acre of dirt in our backyard. So these people that I'm thinking of, these big families, and I'm talking like 8 to 10 children each these families had. They lived even further out in an even more rural area. I believe there were like, I don't know, I'm trying to remember, like maybe, I don't want to say compound, but I feel like compound is the right word, of like trailers of that these families were living in. And I just sort of was like, well, it's expensive and they, you know, they're living the ranch life out in the sticks. But the things you're saying, like literally as you're describing the long skirts and the walking around school and the kids, like I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm thinking of two families, two very big families that I'm going, huh, I wonder.
You know what's so sad? Like it could be the same group. Since I've been speaking out more about this, the amount of people I have met that very similar kind of groups. I just met a gal probably a couple months ago. I was taking a comedy class down in Sacramento. So it's probably about a 30-minute drive for me. And so I was carpooling with some other gals that were in the same class. So we didn't know each other and was talking to one of them. She grew up probably about 30 minutes away from me our whole lives. And the exact basically way, but not a part of our group. Like they had their own thing, but so similar that I'm like, this is what's wrong with how we grew up. It was like, we couldn't even open our eyes enough to realize there was other people growing up the same way we were. And we could have like joined forces, but our viewpoint was so narrow that everyone else is wrong. So really you're never looking like we couldn't have, I remember we had one family that my mom became pretty close with the wife. I started babysitting for him. Met him through school. And that was another thing that not very people had jobs, but my parents let us babysit and have jobs. I started babysitting for her and her and my mom became very close. So we were very close family friends. My parents got in trouble so many times because they let them come over to our house. And they were the nicest, like Christian family. And yet we weren't supposed to be friends with them because they weren't in our group. And they were like she was on like a worship team at their church. And so like very outgoing and just so sweet. So they're like, we want to go to your church, you know? And we're like, but they came one time and we were so embarrassed, of course, because I never invited anyone. No. So they come and she was just like, oh my gosh, like, this is so sad. Because she was so into worship and like praising the Lord and all this stuff. And we just would sit there in our metal chairs with our red hymn book. And we would sing like, we probably had about, I would say maybe 10-ish songs with a piano, but you can't get excited. We don't clap. You don't talk or it's silence, but you're just singing. She felt bad. And I'm like, yeah. But we stayed friends with them forever. I mean, her and my mom are still really good friends, but weird, like very obviously weird when someone comes and is like, wow, this is cool. But yeah.
So how long were you in this cult?
For 31 years. Well, and let me go back to the being engaged in high school.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So in eighth grade, for our eighth grade graduation.
Engaged.
Engaged. I had a ring. Okay. That counts. Doesn't matter how old you are. If you got that ring, you're engaged. Don't even need a ring.
I'm kidding. You've got the husband to prove me wrong. Like,
I do. Let me get a picture. Let me get some receipts real quick. So in eighth grade, I have graduation at school, obviously. So he came to that. And that's when everyone was like, oh, he is real. And he is super cute. So they're just like, oh my gosh, like, how did you get him? And I'm like, I know, but he's not allowed to wear shorts. So he's weird too.
Won't be kissing him until we're married.
You're like 13 years old at this point. And all your 13-year-old friends like, wow, what a hug. Yes. How'd you snag him?
And I'm like, you know, the lake is very small. So we, you know, it's like a puddle kind of, and you just jump in it and grab the first one that hops out. So
I really feel like the answer to how you snagged him is, well, I called dibs first.
I did. Yeah. It's pretty much it.
That's an epic story to tell your grandkids, you know?
I mean, I'm so proud. I'm so proud. Like,
yes, yeah.
Guess what? I did it. It's amazing. I made a good choice, even though I don't know what kind of choice it was. It was probably mostly made for me, but whatever. So anyway, they did get to see that he was real in eighth grade. And then his high school graduation. So he went to a different high school, but not too like close by. I went to his high school graduation. And that's when all of his friends realized that I was real.
And that you were a babe in a jean skirt.
So that was an exciting moment. Yeah. And they're like, whoa, you didn't tell us how hot she was.
He's like, you should see her calves. No, just kidding.
No, that's for me on our wedding night. I know. No one's allowed to see her calves. I'm sure they were very nice too, but still.
Not as nice as the boys' calves because they got to play basketball.
Yeah, exactly. They had some better exercise and their calves were probably so hot. But we couldn't see them because they wore jeans to play basketball. So, you know.
How comfortable.
It's not like we're checking those calves out. Yeah. And guys' legs are so hot. So it's a good thing they wore jeans. Could you imagine?
Oh, the sin.
The problems we would have had if they were out there in shorts.
The temptation.
Oh, I know. You'd be grabbing them, headed to the bathroom. Like, I can't. I cannot contain myself. Look at those jeans. I mean, shorts. Oh,
would they have been basketball shorts, like the shiny ones? Or would they have been jorts, like jean shorts?
Probably jorts. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought.
Because the basketball, you know how the texture, a little clingy, you wouldn't want to know that there are parts down there.
Doesn't leave enough to the imagination.
Yeah. Immodest.
No, right.
Gross.
We would just been staring there like, yeah, that was amazing.
Thank God for jorts.
Thank God for jorts. I mean, not that I ever saw those either.
Basketball jorts.
Basketball jorts.
Oh, that's just so fabulous.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. And my husband still complains about playing sports in jeans. He's like, the chafing? Like, jeans weren't made to play sports in. Like, it's not how you should play sports. I'm like, yeah, at least you got to play.
You should tell him he can wear athletic wear now.
I know. Yeah. He can wear athletic jeans now.
You should give him permission.
Yeah, he can wear like jeggings. They're a little stretchier.
Yes, he does. They're amazing.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All yeah. Right.
Okay. Ooh. So high school.
Ooh. So from a very young age.
Yeah.
One, you call dibs on your husband and you let everybody know about it.
Yes.
And then two, you're obsessed with becoming a mother, with getting pregnant and starting a family.
Yes.
So let's talk about getting out of high school, getting married, and wanting to start that family and what that looked like for you.
I actually waited a whole year after high school to get married. And the reasoning was I kind of wanted to continue education, but we weren't allowed to do that. And that wasn't a thing to do. And so I was in a very like conflicted space in my head. So I was already 19 by the time we got married, which was kind of old because we got married the year after I graduated from high school. We planned the wedding that year pretty much. And in our group as well, everyone's invited. You don't have like invitation only. So I had like 600 people at my wedding and it was like not my dream day. Let's put it that way. I had issues with my mother-in-law and pretty much if I could redo that day, that'd be awesome. It was still beautiful, of course. So yeah, so got married and then pretty much right off the bat, you think you're going to get pregnant. And I didn't like, as much as I wanted to be pregnant, I didn't want to be pregnant right away. Like I wanted to save money for a while and, you know, be smart about it, which was weird too, because that wasn't a concept.
Is that, you do think because you had thought so much about it, you like had a very solid plan of what you wanted it to look like when you?
Yes. No, partially. Yeah. Because I did, like, I was just very excited to be a mom, very much. But yeah, I didn't want to. And I think like we grew up and all the people we grew up around, most the people, not a lot of money. And so to me, it was like important to save up and raise my kids a little bit differently. Even though at this time, obviously, I'm still in the cult and have no thoughts of that it will ever be any different.
Right. It sounds so similar to family planning that I'm surprised that you were doing that.
Right.
And I don't think that was the norm at all. We were definitely not the norm. Yeah, for sure. You're right. Because it does seem a little too thought out for how we would do things normally. Like you don't think about things, you just do it.
I'm like, I don't know of any cult that would allow you to wait a year.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And most didn't. I mean, it just depended. But usually you got married and you got pregnant and you started having kids. I was on birth control for probably about a year or two-ish maybe. And I want to say I was right around 23. So a little bit longer than that, when I went off and we're like, okay, we're just going to go off the birth control and get pregnant. Of course, then we didn't get pregnant. And I'm like, oh, that's super weird, whatever. And we just kept trying, of course, because he liked to practice. So we, you know, we'd keep practicing and it just didn't happen. And so I went to my doctor and they say, you know, okay, let's just try naturally for another year. And then we'll assess and kind of see where things are at. Because we were both young and healthy and, you know, nothing wrong with us that would ever make me think infertility. And this is a while ago.
I have a question here.
Yeah.
Was there any part in your upbringing that addressed the possible outcome of infertility?
No.
Like, hey, God may love you. You find your soulmate. You get married. And when it comes time to have children, like, it might not happen. Was any of that ever addressed in any way?
Oh, no, no, no. Never. Never. And I think for me, and when I look back, especially in doing a lot of trauma therapy that I'm doing now, I never really thought about it until later. But when I was going through, because we went through about, I think it ended up being like 4 years of infertility treatments, I really thought that God was punishing me and that I had done something wrong. And so this was my punishment, basically. And so it was almost an acceptance of sorts. And I look at my life and I'm like, I did bad things according to what our cult believed, but life in general and what I believe now, if my kids did it, I'd be like, cool, that's not a big deal. But I, in my mind, it was like, oh, well, this, of course, this is happening because this is my punishment for all the things I did wrong. I think it was traumatic in multiple ways. We were so young and healthy. It was very unexpected, I guess. And because we were still in the cult, all of our relationships were very superficial. And so looking now at the relationships I have with people, I'm so appreciative of like in-depth, real intimacy with other humans. It is definitely different than how I grew up. And so you didn't trust anyone. Everyone knew everything about everybody else. And it was just a very like no wonder I was so insecure and like would just shut down.
Do you ever wonder how much of your personal data is out there on the internet just for anyone to find? I promise it's more than you think. Your name, contact info, social security number, home address, even information about your family members. It's all being compiled by data brokers and openly sold online. This can lead to a lot of problems, including identity theft, phishing attempts, harassment, and unwanted spam calls. But now you can protect your privacy with Delete Me. Signing up for the service is super easy. Just provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. They send you regular, personalized privacy reports showing what info they found, where they found it, and what they removed. I got my report, and I was floored with the results. Of the 105 data brokers they checked, 83 of them had my data. Delete Me then removed 173 listings of my personal data off the internet. And they make sure that it stays off too. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me at a special discount just for our listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and use promo code MLM at checkout. The only way to get the 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and enter code MLM at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/MLM, code MLM.
When we realized that we were going to have some infertility issues, we didn't want to like share it with anyone because I felt like now everyone's going to judge me because, and they're going to ask, what's your sin? What did you do wrong that God's doing this to you? So like at first I really didn't want to like say anything about it. Well, then of course the rumors start going around, you know, and I'm like caught up in this drama of who said what and blah, blah, blah. So it was just a very, you know, let alone just infertility on its own is the worst thing, you know, that a person has to deal with ever, I feel like, unless you decide you want to adopt. And then it was very, just because of the cult situation, it made it that much worse. And so I just had a lot of unease around it. If I wouldn't show up for a meeting, it was like, oh, what's wrong? Is she pregnant now? Is she not? Like, it was just so crazy. Like, I just hated it. I hated it. And during that time, all of my friends were getting pregnant and having babies. So that added another layer. For a long time, no one knew that I was going through any fertility issues. So I'd be going and planning all these baby showers. And I can just remember this one road because it's kind of a long road. We lived kind of up in the foothills at the time. And I can just remember like, it's not safe to drive right now because I'm crying so hard on the way back from another shower, trying to get home. And I should probably pull over and wipe my face. But that's what I did for years. And so I even have a picture of at one of the baby showers because every single baby shower is like, oh, Shannon, are you going to be next? And the whole, and so I have a picture of me at a baby shower holding my stomach, like pushing it out and holding it, like joking because I was a jokester, right? And so I'm like I deflect all pain. I deflect it with humor. And so I have a picture of me with all my friends who are pregnant at this baby shower and me pretending to be pregnant.
Oh God, that's heartbreaking.
But it was very painful. Like, it was awful. Like, I'm still dealing with some of the trauma from that whole experience. And this was years ago, where now I feel like, of course, it would be different how I handle it, because life happens and, you know, you learn a lot. But infertility was a lot different 20 years ago than it is today. You didn't get online and find resources and support groups. It was awkward, uncomfortable, and you hated going. And it was just, it was hard. It was really a big challenge.
I feel like anybody who just listened to that heartbreaking story of you even just posing for that photo, to remember that instance and take pause the next time you might innocently and candidly ask a friend who hasn't had a baby, are you next? Or anything like that. Because again, we don't, and like you're saying, nowadays people are a little bit more open. There's a lot more community-based support for people to say, oh, are you going? Oh, me too. And have that sort of conversation. But back then, it wasn't as open and aware and something that people were talking about. It wasn't something that people really understood or could be compassionate and understanding about. So even listening to your story made me even think and go, oh yeah, no, like that is not something that we should be saying to people, especially people we love, in a way that you're like, oh, are you next? Even with getting married and things, like,
yes,
people don't, you don't need to put weird timelines on people's lives. It doesn't affect you. Like, just let people live their lives.
Yeah.
I would even also point out that that response that you recalled having to feeling, you know, weird in that situation, that is a very frequently forgotten part of your trauma response, is fight or flight or fawn, which is, that is the fawn part of that. You are making a joke out of it because you're uncomfortable. That's the same kind of reaction. I think it's fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, you know, and everyone talks about fight or flight, but this fawn one is, I mean, it's so much more prevalent, I think, especially in women, people who have been socialized as women, and especially in very patriarchal spaces. So,
yeah, absolutely. Excellent point, Michelle.
Yeah. And I think because I can be more of a jokester and be that way naturally, but like what you said, Roberta, it is really a good idea to be conscious of what and how we say. But I'm even guilty of it now, because I'm so removed from that now. It's easy for me to say, oh my gosh, are you going to have another one? I don't think about it. You know, it's kind of like a natural thing to ask maybe sometimes. So I really have to be careful myself, because I don't want to cause anyone that pain. And I know we make mistakes and that's life. But overall, I try to be very conscious of saying things like that, because yeah, it's, I've been there, and it is, it's very hurtful. And people, I think a majority of people don't mean to be hurtful about it. I don't even think anyone knew what infertility was, honestly. So it was just like, why wouldn't you just get pregnant? I don't know. It was weird.
How many years of trying and going through treatments and things like this did you guys go through?
Yeah. So we did, it ended up being about 4 years, 3 or 4 years. I think it was closer to 4 years. And we basically ran out of money. Luckily, we had built a spec house with my in-laws and sold that. And our portion, we spent completely on infertility. So I think we ended up spending over $50,000. And at that time, again, we were like 23, 24. So we had no money. Like, that was it. You know, if we didn't have to spend on infertility, like, that probably would have set us up for life as far as making plans. And we couldn't, because we had to spend it.
Right.
My husband was done with it, I think, a lot sooner than I was. But I was like, how could I not get pregnant? Like, this is going to happen. And so I really had a very hard time giving up the idea of being pregnant. And I had started looking, like, again, 20 years ago, everything was a lot different. But I had looked up websites like on adoption, kind of like, never had thought in my life I would adopt. It was just like, why would I even think that? And so I started kind of opening myself up to that idea a little more. And my husband had an aunt and an uncle that had adopted. It was the only people I knew of that had adopted kids. So that kind of started opening me up to that idea. But same thing, it's like, you don't want to say a whole lot to people, because people just are idiots. Like, you say one thing and who knows what you're going to hear next week that is completely turned around. And again, you just didn't trust these people. So it was really hard to have like the most intimate part of your life shared with strangers, basically, because our relationships were so superficial. So yeah, it was about 3-4 years. And then we just ran out of money. And he was done before I was, because I was a freaking hot mess. I had to quit work because the hormone, I was a disaster. And then looking back, I cannot imagine now going through what I went through and that I was still going to meetings and in that group. Like, I literally do not know how I survived without like cussing people out and being extremely inappropriate, because I hated all things and I show up to meeting and sit in my stupid chair. And so, yeah, I don't know how I got through that, but I did. So then we started opening ourselves up to the idea of adoption. We talked to my husband's aunt and uncle, and they had done private adoption. And so again, we're clueless. We have no clue how anything works. So we're like, oh, we do private adoption. That's what you do. Another 25 grand. So we had to get a loan for that one, and then started the adoption process. So it was a lot. The amount of paperwork that has to be done is insane, but good. Like, I mean, I think it's smart. So just a lot of work, a lot of interviews. It was probably about 6 months of just like pretty intense. Like, if you were good at it, and it was kind of my job at the time, so I got stuff done fast. So I would say probably about 6 months we were done and done all of our interviews. We had to lie a lot, which also I'm like, well, there's probably a lot of foster families out there that lie just like we did. But we had to like say like, oh yeah, church, you know, like, yeah, we go to church. No. So, which is a lie completely, right? So we would just talk about anything revolving around that was like faith and church. But then as far as like how we dressed and stuff, like I had to search for pictures of like us, because you would do like a scrapbooky thing, like of all these pictures of you, a profile basically. And so, of course, it wasn't digital back then. So you actually glued things. And so I like had to find pictures of us from like our honeymoon, where he was in a tank top, so it looked kind of more normal. And like I was in a short like mini skirt thing. And so like I had to search for pictures like that to share, or I would share like waist up so it wouldn't look weird. Because I'm like, if you put 10 pictures and you're in a long denim skirt in every single one, that's going to be weird. So that was a hard process to get through, because I'm like, I don't want to lie, but like, I can't let them know really how weird we are. So that was weird, but it was fine.
Wow.
We got through that. Yeah, it was hard. It was, yeah. And then like during the process, like my sister almost died. Like it was just a lot, the whole thing.
Let's talk about really, because I have zero clue. Mm-hmm. Aside from what people have told me or what I've seen in like movies or documentaries, I have never gone down the adoption or foster care rabbit hole at all.
Okay.
I did date somebody who they did have like foster kids that would come and stay, and they were super churchy, Assemblies of God. But I do remember like two kids around that didn't stay. So I'm not sure what it was. But that's really my only background into adoption. Michelle, what about you? Do you have any adoption background?
I don't think so. The only thing, I'm very curious to hear, you know, your perspective, especially because, and I think I mentioned this to you, Shani, personally, maybe a few months back, but the group that my sister is in, they have like sort of the smaller groups within a bigger group, and their smaller groups are each like focused on a certain aspect of the Great Commission or whatever. And her group that she's in, they've always been really like centered on this idea that they're going to basically have this compound by this land out in rural Missouri. They have their eyes set on it. They've got a whole blog about it and everything. They're wanting to basically have people in their prayer group come out and have like a commune and then take in foster children and raise them on the land doing manual labor. Mm. And that to me is extremely concerning because, one, I already know this is a cult that she's in. And two, even if it wasn't, all of that is just red flags all over. And I don't understand how in the world people could get away with that, but I also assume that they do. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of have really wanted to pick your brain about the foster and adoption and everything like that from that angle, because I just am clueless.
Yes.
Yeah.
It sounds really dangerous. And I just hope that they can't do it, but I feel like it's Missouri and
Okay, so let me finish the story about my son, because there is differences. So our son was a private slash agency adoption. The difference between that and like foster care, because our girls, we adopted through the foster care system. So we've done it both ways. With him, it's private or through an agency. So we went through an agency because we felt like, oh, we'll be protected if we go through an agency, because there's so many things that can happen when you're trying to adopt. So with them, you basically like, you'd have to take all these classes and everything, but then you're basically setting up a profile. Birth moms will look through different profiles. Like birth moms will maybe tell the agency like, hey, I am looking for a Caucasian family. I want Christian background. I want them to live in this area. Like whatever the birth mom's criteria is, basically, they'll give it to the agency, and then the agency will take family profiles that might match and give her maybe three to look through, or however many. And then she'll say, okay, I want to meet these three families. And so then they'll set up introductions and they'll meet with the family, the couple, and then they decide. So like for us, we had got paired with the birth mom and went and met her down in Berkeley. And she was supposed to have our baby girl on December 10th. And so we were so excited. We met her, started the process. You know, you kind of have, there's just a lot that goes into it. But we were heading down, I think like we were home. We had met her, I don't know how many times, but we were home. It was October. She was due December 10th. And I was going to head down to go to a doctor's appointment with her. And our social worker called and they're like, you are able to do whatever you want to do, but we are dropping her as a client because we're having so many issues with her. Like she was just having some really crazy demands and kind of flying off the handle and just doing things that they were like, as an agency, we have to drop her. We're not going to keep her as a client. So it's up to you. So we said, well, we're with an agency because we feel really protected and you guys know what you're doing. So we will drop her as well. It was awful. It was like so, so, so awful because, you know, we thought this was it. And then a couple of days later, the social worker calls back and she's like, she didn't know we weren't allowed to watch TV, but she, because cult, we didn't watch TV. So she... I saw your very confused face. She said, I don't know if you watch any Bay Area channels, but I just want to let you know that she is birth mom is probably going to be on the news a lot this week. Well, she ended up being a scam artist. And with us, she actually was pregnant, but she had been going all through different states, scamming people of their money, which is what she would have done to us, and taking it and then moving on. So that was devastating because we're like, cool. Yeah. So she was on the news. Like I have articles that I printed out back then and everything just to have, but so that was kind of crazy. But at the same time, we're like, okay, like good thing we said we stopped and didn't start giving her money or anything on our own.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was that story.
That's one check in the pros list for going with an agency, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was. And they did protect us.
Yeah, the agency saw it and they were like, nope.
Jesus.
Wow. Yes. And I was very glad for that because it was hard to make that decision. We didn't want to. We only did because they were. And so we're like, yeah, we better do the same thing. And I'm glad we did because obviously we would have given her anything.
Right.
So yeah, so that was rough. But then the next month or so, it's kind of a long story, so I won't go back too far. But November, Thanksgiving, we were at family's house down on the coast and got a call on the way home from a friend of mine who I had been volunteering with at her animal rescue because I couldn't work because I was a psychopath when I was on infertility meds. So I was volunteering. Anyway, she calls me crying and is like, will you adopt my grandson? And I'm just like, what is going on? Calm down. Like, what's going on? And so, yeah, her son had a baby and I knew about him. Like I saw pictures of him at her house because I was over there all the time and it just wasn't working out. And so it was like, okay, what do we do now? So called the social worker, figuring everything out. But the coolest thing was, is his birth parents came to our house and dropped him off on December 10th,
what?
Which is when baby girl was supposed to be born.
Oh my gosh.
So how old was he when he came home to you?
He was a month old.
Oh my God.
He was a month old.
Wow. Yeah.
When she called you, he was just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He was little.
Okay.
So that's cool because it all like circles around.
That is. And it's like, I got goosey.
I know.
Yeah. As Paula would say, goosey.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So we got him, and that was not the end of his story. It got very traumatic after that. Birth mom took him back, and we have a great relationship now, but it was real, real tough. We paid for medication for a while to kind of get things calmed down. And it all ended up working out, but there were a couple of weeks we didn't have him. And I don't think I've ever been through anything so hard because, yeah, it was not good. So that was really hard, but it all ended up working out eventually. He was 9 months old when we finalized. And that is one thing that's actually common across for the adoption side of things, foster care, is they have to be in your home for 6 months before you can finalize adoption. So that is a rule that still stands. And by the time we got his date and everything, he was 9 months old. So that was that experience. Kind of was like, okay, infertility was hard, but this is much more hard. So I don't like to scare people when they say they're going to adopt because it's amazing. And it is like every situation is so different. It's hard. It's really hard.
Were you still in the group?
When our son was 4, we got out.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So yeah. And that's when I was like 31-ish. And a lot of things happened in the cult. Our generation kind of started pushing back on a lot of issues. And then my dad's generation kind of started doing the same. And there was a lot of conflict and drama. For me personally, a lot of it had to do with being a mom. Because as my son was getting older, I'm like, I'm going to have to start lying to him. I'm going to have to start saying, you can't go to T-ball. I don't know why, but you're not allowed to play T-ball. Like all these things that I didn't have beliefs in. And I'm like, I can't raise a kid basically lying to them about beliefs I don't even have.
You start realizing, well, maybe you don't care like about yourself enough to have rebelled against these rules that you didn't like when you were a kid, but you love this kid. You're not going to make him
yep.
go through it knowing right. that you hated every second of it or whatever it is, you know?
Yes.
It's a very different kind of love, especially if you've, you know, if you've been taught to loathe yourself in any kind of way, which is what these groups do.
Right.
Yeah. It's like you can go through abuse and you can tell yourself, I'm strong. I can handle this. I can knock it down. I can bury it deep.
Yep.
But when you see your helpless child going through mm-hmm. it and you're like,
not going to happen.
No. Okay. No, my job is to make sure you don't have to deal with what I dealt with.
Right. Right.
And to see that, so was that like the final straw? Was like, I'm not going to let my kid go through this too?
Yeah, it was. And then too, also him being a boy, I'm like, he's going to turn into one of these people. Like, and I'm like, I don't yeah. want him treating his wife. Luckily, my husband is very sweet and treated me great. But his dad, ooh. So like, I don't want him to see that and think that's okay.
Right. But it, you know, if right. your husband hadn't, it would have been all right with the group.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like you're still influenced by it. Whether you have a normal, like I look at myself and it took me a while to realize that there was abuse in my life because I was like, oh, no, my family was great. Like we were fine. But it doesn't matter. You're still influenced by the source that is kind of your life. And so, yeah, but that did. That was kind of the push for me. And then a lot happened where it was just a lot of chaos and a lot of people basically left at the same time. We kind of dissolved the whole group in our area. There's like a few sprinkles, but not much. But a lot of them went down your way, Roberta. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, great. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you are welcome.
But at least I know what to look out for now.
Yes, you will find, you will not have to look hard. It will be a sore thumb, you know? It's like, oh, there they are. There's Shani's friends.
Look for the jeans on the basketball court.
Yes. So yeah, that really was kind of what got me out.
So you're out by the time he's 4.
Yes.
3 years later, he turns 7.
Yes.
And you're like, I think we want to do this again, but we're going to go the foster route.
Yes. Yes.
Was there a choice? Like, let's see if it's different. Or was that just what was best for you at the time?
We had no money.
Oh, okay.
Yes. All right. So that's a big part of it.
Foster kids, they're like, uh-huh. they'll pay you to take them.
Right. Right. And that's what, like, a lot of people ask about the differences. And with private adoption, obviously, it's a completely different experience, right? Because you're being chosen by a woman. You're going to meet this person. So our situation, even with an agency adoption, was different because we ended up kind of finding him ourselves and didn't go through completely with how they normally do it. But with going through the foster care system, it was very similar starting out because you're taking all the classes again. You are doing the home studies again. It's everything all over again, basically. I kind of at that point was like a little less like have no clue what I'm doing. And so I was a little more prepared. So I got things done. It was great. We got licensed and everything. So we were good to go. And at that point, but with the foster care system, it's more, you know, you're seeing profiles of kids and you're getting to say whether you want to meet them or not. So it's kind of the opposite, or you'll get social workers that are, we still would give them like a profile. You get social workers that will look through profiles and say, hey, I've got a kiddo on my caseload that I think would be perfect for this family. Let's see if they want to meet them. We basically started, we did respite care since we were licensed because there's always a need for respite care. So you'll have kiddos that are in between families or someone that got in the middle of the night, they got taken from their home or situation and they need a place to stay. So we did respite care, not a ton of kiddos, but we were open for that. So we kind of did that for a little bit. And then in the meantime, we're getting all these profiles of kids. I really, in my planned out mind, since I was, you know, 12 years old, I wanted a boy first and then a girl. And then that was it. That was the plan. So I did get my boy, not how I imagined, but I got that. And so in my mind, it was just a girl and we're done. And we never cared about race or even disabilities. Like we were open up to a certain degree. And so you'll kind of do that when you go through a profile, like what you're capable of, basically. If disabilities are okay, what kind? And, you know, even it would matter like what your home is like. Are you capable of having someone with a wheelchair? Or, you know, there's different things. My main request was I wanted a kiddo. I kind of wanted under 3, but for sure younger than our son. So that was kind of our main thing. So we start getting all these profiles sent to us and the social worker usually call and then they send you a profile and very little information. Usually not a picture. Actually, I don't think ever a picture. Very basic information like birthday and maybe something about the kid, but very little information. So you'd get these profiles. Well, I was getting all these profiles from multiple children and I'm telling my social worker, no, I think you forgot. I just want one girl. She was like, okay, well, let me know if you guys open yourself up to a sibling set. And the more that I saw and the more involved we got with like doing respite care, I'm just like, oh my gosh, there are so many sibling sets.
Keep the kids together.
They really try hard to not separate them. Yes. And so we opened ourselves up to it. And I'm like, okay, I guess we're going to say yes to this. And so I'm like, here again, not my plan, but here we go. And so then we started really like, yeah, opening ourselves up to that. It's just a long process, right? You say yes, then a different family gets them. So it's a lot of back and forth, a lot of emotional drama. I think it was a lot less for me after having my son, because at least I had a kid already, right? It's not like I was so desperate that I'm just like, I mean, I was still emotional. It was a lot. But we finally got placed. We got a call that said, hey, we have an 18-month-old. We think there's a sister involved somewhere. We're not real sure, but can you at least take this one for now? It was like that night we had to go get her. So I'm like, sure. So we go and get her, bring her home, 18-month-old, you know, so just like crazy. She was hilarious. So like a couple days later, they called and everything was going great. Dakota was in kindergarten or first grade at the time. It must have been kindergarten, gosh. So maybe he was 6. Anyhow, they called and they're like, oh, there is a baby sister down in SAC in NICU. Can you guys take her? And I'm like, well, yeah, whatever, you know. And so my husband and I had to go down and start taking care of her at the hospital. Like they trained us how to like take care of her. And they loved us. Like it was so much fun because they, when we left the hospital, they like piled us with like all these supplies and they were so sweet. But when she reached 4 pounds, she was able to come home with us. Yeah. She was so tiny, so tiny, 4 pounds. So when I brought her home though, here we have her sister who has no clue what this baby is, or, you know, they don't care if it's her sister or not anyway. So I'm trying to protect this little 4-pound baby from an 18-month-old monster. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, what is happening?
That you just met.
That I just met, yes. And then you're to the like non-sleeping. And then because she was so tiny, I swear, like, it's not like it matters, but I felt like because she was so tiny, like I had to like not sleep even more because what if she needs me? But it was an experience. It was really great. We kind of thought we only had them for a few weeks and it looked like birth mom was going to be coming back in the picture. That was awful. And I think my husband, like after that, didn't want to do anything else. He's like, I can't see you go through that again. But because I think the baby, there was so much helplessness and need with this teeny tiny baby that I got so attached. Like, I mean, I think anyone would, but I like loved her. I mean, I loved both of them. They were amazing. But anyhow, they end up going back with birth mom. I stayed in touch and would like take them gifts.
You know, there's probably something scientific with pheromones that also contributes to that, because newborn babies, yes, right out of the womb, they give off something that.
Yes. Oh, and yep, you just hold them, mm-hmm, and it's just like, oh, mm-hmm, my gosh, you, yeah, need me. Like, you're so tiny.
My son was 5.5 pounds when I took him out of the hospital. He was a little tiny, oh, guy, yeah.
Not that. Oh, yeah, that is not so far, tiny.
Oh, my God, little.
Yeah. Well, it was so funny because we went and got a car seat. You know, they have to, like, in the hospital, make sure they fit in the car seat, blah,
with
blah.
With all of the padding and the newborn.
Yes, and she's like this big. Well, there's a different car seat at the time. This was a while ago that would allow for down to 4 pounds. And the other ones are like 6 pounds or something they start at. Well, I thought I got the small. I went to the store, you know, they tell me. And so and of course it was like the most expensive car seat because, huh, baby's going to be protected. And then it was the wrong size. So we had to go back to the store and get this next level down that would allow, which still was useless. Like the straps on him, I'm like, she's going to die if we get in a car accident. Like there's no way she's staying in there.
Also, can I just say preemie diapers being more expensive than newborn diapers is bullshit?
Yeah, what is that? Yes. Mm-mm,
baby tax. It's not cool.
Stupid. Yeah, no, it is. But I didn't even have to worry about that because the hospital set us up with like diapers for life.
There you go. Oh, yeah. They loved you. Well, how could they not? What you did is I literally am like crying over here. And I'm just like, that's so amazing.
It was, you know, and it's what we kind of signed up for, but it still was much harder. Like I still talk about like getting into foster care again when the kids are even older. My husband's like, no, you cannot do that because I don't like seeing you like that. And I'm like, but if you knew you were just doing it part-time, like, you know, but it's still too hard. It's so hard. But anyway, I'm trying to think, the girls left. And then it was literally like maybe a month later, maybe a couple weeks, we got a call for our girls. Again, no information, just like a year and 2 years old, and that's pretty much it. And so we had to drive about 3 hours to the county where we met them. And so the thing is too, like with foster care, they'll say, hey, we've got this sibling set. There's three families that we're talking to, so you might be one of them. So let us know if you want in or not.
They're just like on call.
Yeah. So it's basically like, we're going to choose one of you guys, but you have to say yes or no. So there was a lot of that. And we would say yes. And then someone else would get them, you know? And so we had been used to that. Well, with these girls, when my social worker called, they're like, it was like an emergency situation. The family they stayed with was going to adopt them. They end up having to move out of town. It was a rushed kind of thing. And they're like, we're not calling anyone else. If you guys say yes, they're yours. So it was like very like, oh my gosh, this like is probably real. So we said yes. We went and met them like 2 days later and then brought them home like 4 days after that. All of a sudden, we're going from one kid to three. And so we had like 3 days basically to get their rooms ready and get everything together.
They were 1 and 3?
1 and 3. So wow. When they came to our house, they were 14 months old and 2.5. And it was insane. Like driving home from getting them, we had like a smallish SUV. And so I just remember, because Dakota was in a booster seat still, we basically have three car seats jammed. And I'm like, so first on the list, we're going to have to get a new car because we don't fit in this one anymore. They came home with us. They stayed. Their adoption process went very easy, thankfully. And, you know, about 6 months later, we finalized their adoption. So they're ours for good now. And now they're 10 and 12. And my son is 16. Wow. And we survived.
Wow. That's incredible.
But it's a lot. Wow. It's a lot, you guys. And I think, like, for anyone, I know you talk about, like, wanting to kind of talk about the adoption side of thing. It is not for the faint of heart. It's an amazing thing that I think, you know, people are always like, oh, you're so amazing that you do that. And you're like that savior complex type thing. And it's like, no, like if that's the reason you're doing it, maybe no, it's not for you, because it's not just like, oh, I'm going to save all the kids because I can't do that. It's more like for us, it was, we wanted a family. And then as far as what opened us up to the sibling set was really seeing that need and understanding, like, I actually made a pro and cons list, and everything on my cons list was very selfish and greedy. And so I realized, like the bigger car, stuff like that. I'm like, I don't want to get a bigger car. I want to be able to just drive a normal car. So I realized it was very greedy, but at the same time, you have to be very realistic with what can I handle and what can I handle? Like when it comes to disabilities, and most of these kids, whether they're adopted at birth or later in life, they all have trauma. I would say if your plan is to adopt, do a lot of research and be ready for anything, basically, because a lot of things can show up later with these kiddos that right off the bat might not seem like an issue. And then later in life, they might need extra care or support in different areas. And I think when I look at our life now and what we deal with our kids and the friends around us, it's interesting because a lot of my friends are dealing with very similar type traumas with their vagina-born children. So it's like, okay, yes, I want to be prepared for anything. But at the same time, if you're planning on being a parent, you should probably kind of be planning on anything anyway. Because just being adopted or having trauma from foster care or whatever, you know, it's not just that. There's a lot of other things. And in utero, like they talk about the trauma in utero, and it happens all the time, or difficult childbirths, you know, there's trauma that's involved with that. So I think just being aware and knowing, like, okay, there's trauma. There's going to be trauma. Who knows how it will present itself someday. But just, I think that could be with any kid, right? It's not just because your kid was adopted or in foster care. Yes, there are things that may be different. But I think as a whole, just be prepared. And I think be ready to be a support to your kiddos. Because I think a lot of people go into it thinking, I don't know. I see a lot of different things, but it's a challenge. I mean, being a parent is a challenge, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like so freaking hard. It's not just because my kids were adopted. They're just, I love them to death. I love my children. But oh my God, they drive me crazy, you know? And I think, and like for girl. Me, like being, yeah. Uh-huh.
You're not alone, yeah. Girl. Well, here's something interesting, right? Like, for you to grow up in a cult and have this very internalized bubble of what it looks like to be a mother, right? Mm-hmm. You find your man, you imprint on him, you get him mm-hmm. married, he gets you yes. knocked up, you have as many fruitful babies as you possibly can,
right.
and you live happily ever after. And this yeah. is what you've been told since the day you were born. It is what you are working toward. It is what the goal is.
Right.
And throughout your life, you find out that this is not how this is going to work for me. And you're still right. able to adjust and to know that I still want to be a parent. It's going to be hard. It's being a parent is hard, like you said, regardless, right? Yeah, it is just, the worst yeah. and the best thing that you will ever do in your life simultaneously.
Like, right. It is. It's exactly it.
Right. Right. Well, so as a parent now, one of my biggest things growing up, and again, like grew up pretty good, but we still have trauma. Mm-hmm. One of my things was that I wanted to be the kind of parent that I didn't have, or that
yeah.
could provide things to my child that I didn't have. And I was very privileged growing up on the physical aspect of things, but not so much the emotional and like mental aspect of things.
Mm-hmm.
So when I grew up, I knew that I wanted to be a more present parent, to be that mom that's like, tell me how you're feeling. Let's talk about this. I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to call you names, or I'm not going to do these things. So in your entire journey of knowing what you wanted, realizing that the way you're going to get it was not going to be the way that you thought, and then becoming that, how has that journey like informed how you parent your children, and how are you being a better parent than the one that you had?
First of all, yeah, like you, I feel like, oh, I had great parents, but same on the emotional side. I think that both my parents were very depressed. Neither one of them liked the group we were in and always wanted to be out. And I think that was very felt as a child. And then my husband's parents, yeah, if we could just be opposite of them, that'd be great. So it was very important to us to parent differently. Like my husband has said multiple times, he can't remember ever his parents saying that they loved him. And so he's like, he's still with my son, Dakota, who's 16. He's like, I'm sorry, dude, but I'm going to be telling you I love you forever. And, you know, you're just going to have to get used to it. I'm going to hug you and embarrass you in front of your friends. So that has been very forefront of our mind when raising children. I find myself reverting back a lot. Like, I have to be uber aware of how I parent, because I was raised with a lot of the like guilt induced type of fear-based everything. And so I will find myself being that way with my children. Again, this is something I work on all the time, and so I'm very aware of it. But because I can tend to be that way and kind of revert back, one of my biggest things, and I say this a lot, is I apologize to my kids. And that's something I never, ever experienced as a child. And so I apologize to them when I do screw up. And I think, you know, I want them to know no one's perfect. We all are going to do things in life. And I would rather them trust me and be able to come to me with big issues than to be afraid and hide and maybe end up in a bad situation. So, and I feel like we've nailed it pretty well with our kids, like, because we both have been very aware of that. And we're on the same page as far as like, we want that for our kids. And they do come to us with everything. And so I think sometimes I'm like, oh, can I turn this part off? But, you know, it's great.
I have a different perspective, I guess, as someone who was raised in like, I don't know how different, but my mom at least was extremely, extremely loving, and I knew it. And she was very expressive about it and very empathetic and caring. And we were, you know, less privileged in other ways and very rich in emotion. But also we had a lot of dysfunction. And what I, you know, try and bring into my parenting is actually to just try and be more like my mom.
That's
so
great.
I think what you're picking out as like the important thing that was missing for you is correct, because that's what I did have. And I don't feel like I want to do things differently. I just, you know, I want to improve on them, but I really love the foundations that she created for
that's
me.
That's awesome.
So it's really cool.
That's amazing.
That is great. Well, and I think that there's positives in like my parents, for instance, there are so many positives. And so it's not like I want to be like my husband's parents, a different story, that I'll just want to be opposite. But like with my parents, there are positives there. It's just still you're trying to decipher like what's positive, what's not. And definitely, I like what you said, though. It's like there are ways that there are things that I would want to expound on. And because there were lovely things about my parents. I mean, there still are, but oh, kids are fun.
I love your story because like it starts as a child, you know, I mean, everybody's story starts as a child, but like it starts as this really idealistic child who's believing all of the sunshine and rainbows and butterflies and being like, yes. And then even in the cult, you're thrust into reality.
Right. Yes.
And instead of people saying, I'm so sorry, this is hard for you, it's the opposite of like, how come you're not pregnant yet? Why don't you have any kids? And it's this really interesting like story arc to where you and your family were like, this doesn't work for us. We have to get out of this. And then like being able to be the people that you wanted to be, having your son help be that straw, getting you out, like that final, like, oh yeah, we gotta do better for him. We didn't do better for me, but we got to do better for him. And getting out and your family being like, yep, this is what we were waiting for too. And living this really beautiful, authentic life now. I just think it's so cool, especially with talking about the ways that children are abused.
Right.
Whether it's malicious physical abuse or whether it's neglect because we don't know any better as parents. Like, it's just a very beautiful story arc of you coming through all of these themes and coming out the other side and being like, I did choose to be better and I am better and we're better for it.
Yes.
I just love that.
Thank you. Yeah. And also, like, I want to point out too, when we did end up going and adopting the girls and just the process the second time around, it was very different because we were out of the cult. And so I had support that I hadn't had before.
Oh, wow.
And that was huge in facilitating kind of that journey with the girls. And in fact, I just a couple weeks ago went on a trip with, we just call it like our adoption group, but two of them are the social workers that I became very good friends with. And one's my sister, because she did the same. And then two other friends that also adopted that all used to live very near me. And now everyone's gone. I'm the only one left here. So we meet, or we're trying to meet at least every year. So we just got back from that trip and it was amazing. It was like, it just to like appreciate that support that I still have, because like as parents, I think we need support forever because kids are constantly changing and growing and bringing something new to the table. And we're like, oh, cool. What do we do with this? And so having that support is amazing. So that was huge, being out of the cult and doing it again. I'm glad we did because it was a different experience for sure.
Wow. It's so cool and wild at the same time that you have so many different varied experiences of like the same outcome, right? Of like just wanting to be a mother.
Yeah.
Like going through infertility and then you ended up having a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
And then deciding to get into adoption and then fostering both in and outside of a cult. Like you really do have a lot of very unique perspectives on this entire topic. So I just really want to say thank you again for opening that up and starting a little bit more of an adoption conversation on this show. Yeah. Wow. And I got to learn more of your story. Like, you know, you're friends with people, but you don't ever sit and like ask really like hard hitting, like, tell me more about that. Like, it's just not something that ever comes up except in these settings.
Yes.
So it's really cool to get to know you on like a deeper level as well.
Yes. I love it too. It's a fun opportunity.
At the end of these, we do some rapid fire questions. I feel like you can do this.
We believe in you.
Okay.
So we're going to do an adoption theme here. Give me one word that encompasses how you feel about the adoption and fostering process.
That's not a word.
A maniacal laugh works too.
Was that not a word? I'm sorry. That was in my mind. Scary.
Okay.
Scary.
Yeah.
Give me a piece of advice to a family who is thinking that adoption or fostering is going to be their best option. What would you tell them at the beginning of their journey?
Find support. Like find a good, there's so many now. There's so many people that are in the adoption world, and I would say find support because it is a hard, intense journey. But I do feel like if you have a good support system around you, you can rock it. Don't be afraid of doing it, even though it's very scary. Don't be too afraid.
I'm sorry. I don't think this might have been the first time anyone's been interrupted in the middle of their rapid fire answer, but do you have any recommendations for where people can like start to look for support in their area or with the area of interest that they, you know, are looking for? Or is it Facebook?
Yeah. Like as far as moving forward. Yeah. I mean, yeah. But I think now there's just so much out there. So there really isn't. It depends if you want to go the foster care route or go, you know, do a private adoption or an agency adoption. But I would say look, there's always or usually a county office that will facilitate adoptions with foster care. So it's a good place to call and see. And usually even on their websites, they'll have a bunch of local agencies, like foster care agencies that you can connect with. We have a local one here that I would recommend if it was a local person, but I would say do that. Get on your city, county websites and kind of see what you can do from there. And then as far as support goes, Facebook, I mean, I feel like I don't really like advise that too much anymore because I ended up getting off of a lot of the groups because it's so much drama and I can't handle drama.
No.
So I think be careful when picking like support groups. I prefer in person and people that I can call and talk to on the phone. Churches, a lot of churches have groups, support groups for foster care or adoptive families. So if you are connected with a church, maybe kind of check out that. But yeah, I would get on the county website and kind of see what they have. But it's find support. Like, there's people there, wherever you live, there's people that around you that have done the same thing, and find them. But yeah, and research.
Technically, at the root of our show, it is an anti-MLM podcast. So I have to ask you an MLM question. Oh, yeah, and that is, Shani, what is the worst MLM in your opinion?
Oh, that's okay. I don't know, like, specific brands necessarily, but I would say makeup. Because for me, like, I'm using a certain makeup right now and I'm not wasteful. So like, I will use it up until it's gone. But the one I have right now is from an MLM because it was before I was anti-MLM completely and I didn't really understand. But I feel like they're the worst, or maybe like skincare products, because if you really like the product, it's something that you have to go back for again and again. Where like the leggings, it's like, okay, I'm over them now. Not a big deal. Or it was a phase. Where the skincare, to me, it's like, if you love it, then you're like stuck. I don't know. I mean, they're all terrible.
Well, it's also connected to like your self-worth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like consumables. I've never thought about that. Consumables versus, yes, self-worth too. Yeah. But
like, I need this makeup to look beautiful. I need this skincare right. to look beautiful, to be valid.
And theirs is the only one that works right. like this. It's perfect. I mean, it's so amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like that. I can't stand them all anymore.
I thought you were going to say EXP.
Oh, yes. The real estate one. All my friends are in it. Yeah, that's terrible. That's terrible. Yeah, not all my friends. Maybe one. It's, yeah. But obviously that's what your show's about. So I don't even want to get started there, but oh my gosh. And I thought your question was going to be, how many MLMs have you been a part of?
Well, how many?
I don't know, like maybe seven maybe.
Wow. That's more than me.
Shani, that's more than me.
I mean, but think about what I came out from. We're primed for it, right?
Right.
Well, maybe not. Pampered Chef was the first. doTERRA,
mm-hmm.
Scentsy.
Ah, okay.
Scentsy girl, all right.
Yeah, I loved Scentsy. Mary Kay,
mm-hmm.
that's one of those skincare product ones. Mm-hmm. That was way back in the day. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe just four. I can't think of any else. Okay,
No fitness, no wellness, no
Oh, yes, hair. Body for Life. Wait, not Body for
by
Life.
Body by Thigh.
Beachbody.
Yeah, Beachbody.
That was mine.
Yeah.
Okay, that's five. Like, yeah.
I mean, if we kept going, I might think of more, but that's all I can think of right now. Very sad.
You know what? If we kept going, we would find companies that you had no idea were MLMs.
It's true. Shani, what is the hardest lesson that you took away from the adoption process?
Oh, I guess never, like, my life was in my mind from a young age so planned out that like, I am not that way anymore. Like, I'm more acceptable of change and that things are going to go awry. Yeah. I ride the wave.
Rolling with the home.
Yeah, I am. I'm just so much more accepting of life and the changes and the fluxes, and where before it was just like, oh no, that's not part of my plan. So I'm sorry, that's not going to work out. But that was a very hard lesson. Very hard lesson.
And then give me the positive takeaway from this adventure in adoption and fostering.
Oh my gosh. Well, I have three amazing children and I'm a mom. So it, you know, as much as I talk about how scary it is, because it is, I like to be real about things. Okay. So I went in eyes real squeezed shut. No clue, no experience, young. So that's why I tell people, you know, and what I did is I read books. I read a lot of books, and that is because that's what there was back then. I recommend doing research, you know, because I think the takeaway is positive and it's good, but having your expectations a little bit better than I did can prevent a lot of the kind of trauma that, I mean, not prevent it, but be prepared for a little bit more. Because yeah, the outcome's amazing, you know, it really is. It's worth it.
Well, thank you so much. One, Michelle, for joining us.
Yes.
Because it's always so fun when Michelle's here. And then Shani, for being just really so open and answering our questions and sort of dissecting the differences mm-hmm. in adoption. Well, I'm sure there's tons of people listening who also learned a ton. I had no idea about even half of the ways that you can adopt and foster. So very, very interesting. Thank you.
Of course.
I'm just so happy that you're here today. You're so wonderful.
Me too.
Same. I was like so excited that I was able to make it work and show up. You are an excellent roommate and and cameraman and music video director, everything that works.
Very much so.
Forgot about that.
Good things came.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I found you, and I believe it was through that viral lunchbox hack thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Probably like so long ago. But if you guys are moms or ex-culties or just anybody who wants this really hilarious, honest, authentic, open, beautiful makeup tutorials, your eyebrow tutorial, one of my favorites.
Stellar.
Well, obviously you didn't use it today or I would have noticed.
You would have.
No, I didn't have anywhere special to go. And I wanted to look natural for you.
Oh, thanks. Okay. I can accept that. Good answer.
Definitely check out Shani. Where can everybody find you?
ShaniPantsShow.com. But I am The Real Shani Pants on Instagram and Shani Pants pretty much everywhere else. You can also find my podcast on Instagram as well, which is The Shani Pants Show podcast. Yeah, that's lots of fun.
So fun. Thank you so much. You're so wonderful.
Thank you. It was so much fun.
Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast or visit our website at lifeaftermlmpod.com. And don't forget to check out our Patreon for exclusive content and join the community on Discord. You can find all of the links to follow in our show notes. Life After MLM is produced by Roberta Blevins. Audio editing is done by the lovely Kayla Craven. Video editing by the indescribable RK Gold. And Michelle Carpenter is our triple emerald princess of robots. If you have a story about a cult, fraud, scam, or MLM and want to be on the show, please hit us up. We would love to help you tell your story and start your healing journey in Life After MLM. See you next time, Hunts.